This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
I'll tell you what's impressed me, though, with the PropTech landscape that I did not expect. In the industry I came from, in the marketing technology industry, the agencies controlled a lot of power, and they were just disrupted so hard, and they failed. Look, legacy companies will generally fail when it comes to building their own technology stack. I'm not going to name names here because, you know, I've talked to people in the most senior positions in real estate, but they'll admit it too. You know, we suck at building technology. Startups are great. But in the advertising industry, the agencies fail to acquire and fail to invest in startups. What I'm seeing in this industry in real estate is really impressive. You've got companies like JLL who have an amazing venture fund. You have property management companies themselves, like Lincoln Property Group, or you have Greystar that are making investments. Seems to me like the major players, I mean, hell, Blackstone's one too, you know? The major players seem to be actually investing in startups. It's like, you know, this example, right? What is it? Who was it that bought a stake in Alibaba? Was it Yahoo or SoftBank? One of the two. They bought a stake in Alibaba, a tiny startup at one stage. Right, and you know, that stake went on to be worth far more than the core company itself.
I think that's valid point. I mean, I think these firms have set up, you know, really strong investment arms. But what I'm saying is that they're, I mean, that's where they are betting on the future. It's not going to be in trying to redevelop their own systems to match what these companies are doing that they're investing in. And you know, they may, you'll see a lot of acquisitions, a lot of consolidation of these big players, you know, acquiring these companies for tens of billions of dollars, but that will be something that happens, I think, over the next 10 years.
Yeah, this is a very, very exciting time for sure. You know, the sort of one of the stats I wanted to throw out here, I'm just trying to find it. I'll look for it later, but it's a fascinating story of how failing to invest in other startups means the incumbent company is going to be completely disrupted. Sometimes incumbent companies destroy startups when they acquire them. You know, in every industry, there's a joke about company X is where great startups go to die after they're acquired, you know? But this is an interesting area where I think that may protect some of the large legacy companies. The CBREs, the JLLs of this world will see startups emerge in their space. It's up to them to either take a strategic equity ownership in those types of companies or to just try to compete. And honestly, this is how the world is. This is frankly evolution. Evolution dictates that the old guard will be disrupted and newcomers come in and they usurp and disrupt the old players. So yeah, fascinating dynamics when it comes to the real estate industry itself.
Yeah, and I'll just say, Zane, like in terms of is the prop tech boom over? I think one really interesting thing to look at is prefabricated construction. And you know, today what that is like, you know, the rise of the accessory dwelling units and putting up a, you know, a little prefab unit in your backyard, all the way to, you know, just recently we've seen the first 3D printed house hit the market. So, this concept of prefabricated homes goes back hundreds of years, and if not thousands of years, really. All the way back to, you know, even the Roman times and doing the concept of prefab construction. But the thing that's changed over the years is the type of technology, the sophistication of technology that's available for people to use to execute on this concept. So
What's your thoughts on where that's going? And by the way, just before you talk about that, I just located the very interesting stat I wanted to talk about. So this isn't about SoftBank, this isn't about Yahoo, it's actually about Goldman Sachs. So Goldman Sachs Check the story out. So Goldman Sachs was offered the chance to invest $5 million for a 50% stake. And they decided to reduce that stake to $3 million because $5 million seemed far too risky. Okay. 5 years later, Goldman Sachs sold its $3 million stake for a 7x return for $22 million. It seemed like a huge payoff at the time, and it helped, you know, their reputation because they made back so much money on their initial investment. But here's the crazy thing. If they'd held on to that stake, that $22 million would have been worth $200 billion before dilution was taken into account. I mean, that is the mistake of the century. And my bad, that didn't even come from a strategic player. That came from Goldman Sachs, you know? So that's crazy. Yeah. So just something to digest there. So going back to prefab, we've had a lot of people on the show. We've had Boxable, we've had Jupe. And, you know, I routinely talk to prefab companies. What's your thoughts on the prefab modular industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really exciting, frankly, especially what they're doing in 3D printed construction. You know, the concept that you can have, you know, a 24/7 contractor that doesn't have OSHA laws or tries to, you know, go on strike or unionize, you know, and you can build properties that really opens up the playing field for more affordable and efficient construction, which is one of the primary challenges that the, you know, many markets like California have with housing affordability is construction, just building, you know, more properties faster for less, and adding that supply into the market theoretically should drive down prices and make housing more affordable. The challenge is really just distribution and scaling it. I mean, I think the number of accessory dwelling units that was built in LA, for example, you know, it almost 10x over the first couple of years that they were in the market, but that number is still a few hundred units. It's not thousands, it's not tens of thousands. So the concept is great. And I think there'll be many different types of kind of prefab construction and modular housing, but it just seems like a logical next step, just given where technology is headed and sort of the economic burdens of housing as a whole.
Yeah, we won't dive into that too much because we've had several shows on this, sort of an anecdote I have here is, you imagine a chief economist who has to look at the financial industry and today has to make sense of all the crazy things going on with cryptos and money being poured into the industry and, you know, et cetera. Well, real estate's even more of a mess. With real estate, you've got things like the nature of construction changing with prefab modular homes and 3D printing. You've got major trends to get your head around. Two things we talked about today, the institutionalization of real estate, especially single family, and the fractionalization and ownership of real estate and how homes are bought. The fact that technology is coming in and automating so many aspects, I feel sorry for my viewers. I mean, they're getting a taste of some of the, you know, mental headache that I have to deal with trying to understand where is this industry going. You know,
it's a complex economy. I mean, there's like 2 million real estate agents alone, right, in the U.S. And then if you think about all the services surrounding a real estate, I mean, it's a huge chunk of the job population, right?
And also it's the biggest source of concentration of most people's net worths or their largest expense. So you're dealing with this multi-hundred trillion dollar asset class globally, and it's about to be disrupted, and this is an exciting time. Look, jury's out. I'm going to keep investing in PropTech startups, but jury's out right now. There's a flood of companies, but even though there's a flood of PropTech startups, they're not getting funded very much. And so there's still an arbitrage. I hate to use that word, but there is a great opportunity for everyone to get involved and invest in PropTech startups. Because, you know, there's many VCs and they're smart. Those VCs just frankly admit, we don't understand prop tech. We're not going to play in prop tech. Some VCs are building out specialized strategies like Andreessen Horowitz, for example, you know, or NEA, you know, I know the folks there very well. NEA also is pretty good in this ecosystem. But a lot of VC firms just frankly say, prop tech, we just don't understand it. And I, you know, I've talked about this before. I've heard of horror stories where VCs will do due diligence by asking their residential real estate agent what they think about this prop tech company. How is a real estate agent going to be able to tell you that? You know, that's just a poor understanding of the market itself.
Well, I guess let me ask you, Zane. I mean, I think that's one of the things we saw back in sort of 2015 time. We got a lot of pushback from people just saying, look, these offline sort of operational intensive businesses, they kind of scare us in VC. We don't know how to look at them. And now everyone's biting at the bit to try to be a part of it because they realize, okay, that's how you can really control the market and build a massive company. How have you sort of looked at operationally intensive businesses and prop tech and found, you know, the opportunity for venture returns that makes sense enough for that you would invest? Like, have you sort of navigated that challenge and, you know, given your experience in technology?
Well, that is a fantastic question, and that's a very hard one to answer. I mean, it depends what day you catch me on. One day I'm pro hardware, or next day I hate hardware, and, you know, I hate operational. But honestly, I'm a big believer in SaaS, and I do like SaaS and software businesses because they produce venture style returns, because the incremental cost of securing a new customer is so low and the incremental margin and profit is so high. Having said that, there are tremendous opportunities, and that underlines my investment in OneRent, where if you can take a stodgy industry that's operationally intensive and you can bring in technology, then you can win. This opportunity didn't exist 10 years ago or 5 years ago. I think it's because of AI and how sophisticated automation software is now, where the opportunity exists. You know, the fact that you can automate so much and you can cut interactions. I mean, look, chatbots have become a thing recently, and you guys were using chatbots very early on. Even in infancy, like embarrassing sort of prototypes, right?
Yeah.
But you've improved them significantly. Things like chatbots have changed that, because anything where you need a human-to-human interaction, which is considerably, a company that requires a lot of headcount, a company that requires a lot of salespeople, or even a call center, which was the most innovative thing companies ever did, was have a call center and offshoring, right? Mm-hmm. Now to bring AI there, you can cut that whole layer of cost. So frankly, is it operationally intensive? I know your team doesn't think it is. Your team believes it has a bad rep as an operationally intensive business. No, it's just building great technology, having amazing technology to automate things. Mm-hmm. And that's what technology should be. I mean, hell, there was a time when bookkeeping was an operationally intensive business. Mm-hmm. There was a time when storing your contacts in an address book was an operationally intensive business. Today, it's called SaaS and CRM technology. So I think some of the operational intensive businesses today will become SaaS businesses. And I ran a company like that. I ran an advertising technology company, and it was an operationally intensive business. We weren't charging a SaaS fee. We were making money as a marketplace, where it wasn't even a marketplace. We were making money on ad spend, right? So we were just enabling agencies. Or we weren't enabling agencies. We were like an agency ourselves. But we had SaaS-like revenue margins. We had high gross margins, high growth rates. And, you know, our business went from $850K in the first year to $15 million in the second year to $56 million in the third year, all the way to $400 million plus, you know, exit. And that just tells you that you can absolutely have venture star returns in businesses that are historically seen as operationally intensive. Some industries have a bad reputation, and that's when venture capitalists stay away. That is the time to be investing. Mm-hmm. Right? You're going to get a lower price. You got your pick. And all those companies that aren't relying with their mouths open and hands out for venture funding, when you realize that VCs don't want to invest in my business, when you realize that no one's going to acquire me, you get back to the foundation of your company and you make it profitable and you make it sustainable and you do what's necessary. And that is when suddenly VCs are coming at you. People want to acquire you. I've been there. I've done that, right? There was a period after we raised our $25 million in venture capital for my last startup that I founded. There were a period of years where, you know, it was hard, and, you know, people didn't want to acquire us. And, you know, we had the chance. We looked at getting, Google once looked at potentially buying us, and that would have probably been, I think, 100 to 200 million, maybe 300 million if we'd done a good job, right? And then, you know, we had another opportunity to sell, and you know, there were numerous tech companies in the mix there, and that was like a $250 million potential acquisition. And then Blackstone came in and got one hell of a bargain buying Vungle, the company I founded, for $780 million. And today that company's probably worth a few billion, I think, minimum.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
the valuation grows like crazy, and then it's suddenly obvious, you know?
And when you bring that valuation multiple to real estate companies, I mean, that because of that, that the ability to expand margins with technology, yeah, that revenue multiple and valuation multiple is, high. It's going to be huge.
It's going to be huge. I came from an industry in advertising technology that was preceded by a string of failures. Mm-hmm. And, you know, WeWork was seen as a failure, although now they're going, you know, public via the SPAC, right? WeWork sort of made people be like doomsday for real estate and prop tech. Mm-hmm. And then as COVID hit, even more so because all these co-living companies went to zero or had to pivot mm-hmm. significantly and change their models. Then Airbnb went public, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there's a SPAC for Opendoor and there's a SPAC for Porch and there's so many prop tech companies going public.
Knock, if you've, they're looking at it now.
Right. Suddenly it's hot. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where it's going to go, but the market size is huge. So I think, you know, I'm trying to answer your question succinctly. I think some operation intensive businesses, when you look at them and you sort of dissect the technology, you realize actually this isn't an operationally intensive business from a headcount perspective. It's just a complex tech stack. But other mm-hmm. businesses are really just operationally intensive and need headcount. And those I'm not a fan of, you know, as mm-hmm. a venture capitalist. But private equity firms love those businesses, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Chuck, back to you. Any final pieces of advice, wisdom, or things you want to share for people listening?
No, I think it's really great to chat with you, Zane, and hear a little bit about your own. You know, I think you're in a unique position being a very active real estate investor yourself and also investing in prop tech. So always very valuable to get your perspective on where those two collide. I guess, you know, like you said, in the spirit of widening the opportunity for all of us, you know, I invite people to come join the prop tech revolution, because it's going to be a big one and there's going to be a lot of big companies that come out of it.
Absolutely. Great notes to conclude on. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
All right. Thanks for having me, Zane.
Okay.